Welcome back, McLaughlin, Carroll, and Turpin, on a Sunday afternoon. Hour two, we are with you until 4 o'clock. I believe Dan Ball is on after that, taking you up to Red Sox pregame. First hour, guys, we did a lot of Red Sox Yankees. We will certainly be doing more, but let's get to some Patriots. Because opening day, week one against the Raiders, 2 weeks from today. Tom, you were down in New York for the preseason finale.
I sure was.
Any big takeaways from that electrifying game Thursday night?
That was one of the least enjoyable football games I've ever watched. Not because the outcome mattered. It was just bad football. And so the answer is no.
Yeah.
I think if you try to take anything away from a third preseason game, which has really become like the fourth preseason game, like no one plays. If you're playing in that game, it usually means that you're not going to make the team, right? Or you're on the edge. There was one exception. You know, we saw a lot of Jabril Peppers in preseason game three. That was really because the Patriots wanted to see him in the mix in game action, real game tape with Craig Woodson, because they're going to play a lot together this season. But no, no real takeaways. My big takeaway of the last few days, it has shifted a little bit in that I am starting to worry a little bit more about their depth and what that could mean for their win total. You know, I've been a guy that's mentioned on this station a few times that I see them finishing in that 8-9 win range just based on how much better I think the team is, how much better I think the coaching is, and that roster, you know, getting better and the schedule being super winnable, right? I don't know, man. It's one of those things where if one thing goes wrong on the offensive line or if one thing goes wrong in the secondary, there isn't a lot behind each position group. So that does scare me, and it kind of makes me want to have my official prediction be like 7 wins, but it's dicey. And we were talking off air before the segment started. The start of the year is not a gimme situation, right? That like that Raiders game could be tough for the Patriots. The Dolphins, I think they're going to regress, but that's still not a guaranteed win here. Like they could feasibly be 0-2 coming back to New England for that game against the Steelers in week three. And I wonder what the mood of the fan base is going to be after the summer that we've had, where it's been Vrabel, 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 new vibe, new culture, things are going to be better. And yet they could be 0-2 heading into that Steelers game.
Yeah, I mean, it's 4 winnable games out of the chute with Raiders, Dolphins, Steelers, Panthers in the month of September. But there's no gimme for this team. Like, they're not good enough to have that. So those are also 4 losable games.
Absolutely.
Like, I don't think any of those teams are going to be absolute trash. And people might push back with the Panthers there, but Bryce Young played pretty well down the stretch last season. So, like, maybe he actually finally found something. But, yeah, even before then, the Raiders are going to be improved for sure. They upgraded quarterback to Geno Smith, who I know, yeah, Geno Smith isn't going to blow your doors off, but he's way better than what the Raiders had if you look at, like, Aiden O'Connell and whatever they were dealing with last year.
And Pete Carroll's a legit coach.
Yeah.
And that matters in football. Like exactly. We talked about earlier, if you change a coach, it can really swing a team.
Yeah, I'm with you guys, and I look at two of the pass rushers they're going to see for Will Campbell in his first stretch here, the first month stretch in the NFL. Like, you're going to open up with Max Crosby, one of the best defensive ends in the league. Then you'll get Jalen Phillips. They also signed Matthew Judon, the Dolphins
did,
so you'll see one of them,
too. And you
have
Chop,
yeah,
who is really good in Miami, one of the most underrated pass rushers in the league.
And then you got T.J. Watt. So that's a murderer's row and a welcome to the NFL for Will Campbell. I think people are overlooking, and listen, there's a lot of reasons to be excited about this season and this team, but I think people are overlooking the teams that they're playing. Like, these are still professional teams. This is still a team that won 3 games last year. I don't count that 4th game. They won 3 games last year, and they were really bad.
So you don't count the Buffalo win?
No, I don't think anyone does, to be honest. Like, they finished, what, we'll call it 3-3.5, I guess. So, yeah. So, just look at the pass rush they're going to see.
The draft order said they won 4, unfortunately.
Yeah, it was what a mess that was, that final Buffalo game.
That was one of the strangest career days of my life, man.
Just what a mess all of last season.
It was just, everyone was just the walking dead in that stadium.
It's just it's night and day, and that's one of the reasons for optimism with this team.
Of course.
But, I mean, you look at, like, just roster-wise, last year with this team, they were, what, bottom 4 on the roster at best? Like, and you know, they made a lot of good additions this season, but how much did they really climb up? And at this point in their rebuild, yeah, they have good players in their starting lineup that they feel good about. But you mentioned it with the depth. Like, what happens if – so you're going to go a lot of double tight end this year. What happens if Hunter Henry or Austin Hooper goes down? Who steps up? With your linebackers, what's going on there? There's just so much – so many question marks with this team behind – like, they feel good about the starters. But it's football. Like, injuries are going to happen, and who steps up in those situations? And I think that's just the part of the rebuild they are at.
Yeah, and there's even – I mean, I don't feel good about the starters on the O-line. Like, that's one where I'm like
– it's a bit of a mess.
Even take out, hey, what happens if someone goes down? Like, how good do we feel even just about what they have, period? It feels like there's still two question marks with the preseason now done, where it's like, all right, yeah, of course Will Campbell's going to start at left tackle, Morgan Moses at right tackle, and Mike Onwenu at right guard. Feels like they're still figuring out center and left guard.
Ben Brown's going to be in there somewhere. They love that guy. Man. They love that guy.
I mean, he's got good size, I guess, so, like, you can move him around. So I get, like, having Ben Brown on the roster, but you really just feel good about Onwenu if we're just being completely honest about it. We're like, yeah, you know, Morgan Moses is a veteran, right? Oh, Will Campbell, number 4 overall pick.
He's looked good.
He has looked good in run-blocking situations right. And in certain pass-blocking situations. Onwenu is going to play right guard. It's a position he's really good at. It's the reason why he got the contract he got. You feel good about that spot. They've treated Morgan Moses. I think someone used the term NBA load management to describe the way he's been handled this training camp season. So, like, do we think that he can stay healthy and be a contributor for all 17 regular season games? I don't know. In, like, the last 2 years, he's played in 13 games both years. After spending most of his career missing no time, the last few years he hasn't been able to stay on the field for a whole season. So now you have again, like, I understand Vrabel is using different types of management for different players. He's not painting with a broad brush. He knows that certain guys require different types of maintenance. But it's just something to monitor. And it's yeah, I know Morgan Moses is like the veteran leader that is saying all the right things and is the guy that everyone's turning to in that room for advice. But that doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be a dynamite right tackle that can play the whole season.
And just on a broader conversation with the depth that we're talking about here, like cut down day on Tuesday, obviously a lot of people looking at Anthony Jennings and Kyle Duggar. Feels to me like this team isn't in the position to be cutting good players.
Agreed.
I think both of them are good players, and we're talking about this depth. And remember, they have $60 million still in cap space. They have the money to pay these guys.
Yes.
I just don't feel like this team is in the spot where they can be dumping off good players. Like, they need all the good players they can get. As simple as it sounds, like, this isn't groundbreaking analysis, but when you're talking about trading off a guy like Kyle Duggar, who's a captain, who's very versatile on the defensive side of the ball, like a guy that you can move around, I feel like you should have that guy, at the very least, as a depth piece.
My thought on Duggar is that if he's willing to be a depth piece and isn't going to be a problem in the locker room, keep him, because you can afford him and you need him.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it's like, okay, maybe Duggar and Jennings haven't had the best camps. Vrabel doesn't see them as starters in his system. Maybe part of it's we've seen him push out other members of previous regimes. Maybe this is something like that where he wants to put
totally
the guys
plate.
He's bringing in, he wants to put them ahead of those guys. But you guys are absolutely right. Like, no, you can't. They shouldn't just be cutting players like that for nothing. If you find a trade that makes sense and you get something in return, fine. Like, if they're fourth or fifth on the depth chart at their respective positions, then I don't have a problem with that. But yeah, I mean, it feels like a bunch of beat writers writing or tweeting things along the lines of, like, yeah, they're going to be turning over a lot of this roster coming up on cut down day and the days that follow, bringing guys in who get cut elsewhere. And I gotta say, guys, like, I just hate hearing that, because it just tells me, like, they know they don't have the depth. They know this isn't a good roster. And, like, maybe you find something that gets cast off by another team. But I just wish where they are in the rebuild, I wish they were further along than just, like, having apparently that many interchangeable parts. Where it's like, well, we don't like what we have, so let's just go grab whoever gets cut from another team and see if they can come in and be better and click here. Like, if that's how it goes, like, that's pretty discouraging to me that they're not. I would have hoped they had more answers and had a little more solidified at this point so close to the start of the season.
I just think it goes back to just how bad the roster was last season. Like, you cannot make up that much ground in one off season. That's just the reality of it. And I know it's been a rebuild since Tom Brady left. I know you had that little bloop in 2022 with Mac Jones's rookie year, but for the most part, it's been a steady rebuild. And if really they bottomed out last year, I think everyone would agree with that. And just how bad the roster is, there's just so much ground to make up that, yes, you feel good about certain parts of your roster, but it's also so recent that you can't turn that around and build a serious contending team. Now, that said, I'm with you. I think they can win 8 to 9 games, and that'd be doubling your win total, more than doubling your win total, because to me, they only won 3 games. So, yeah, like, you feel good about that. And I think, like, people are saying, like, oh, get to the playoffs and win a playoff game. Just remember how much of a bottom feeder they were last year. Keep that perspective and look at the, hey, this, they're doing well. You're starting to feel good about parts of this team, and you still have a ton of cap space. And it's relatively new in the rebuild because they bought them out last year. And it sounds ridiculous to say that because they've been rebuilding since Tom Brady left. But the reality is they never tore it down to the studs, and they finally did. They waited too long to do it, and now you're paying for it.
Yeah, they're really feeling the effects of so many bad drafts in a row. And I saw this note from Mike Reese this morning in his notes column on ESPN.com, where he said that there is a chance when opening day begins that Drake May will be the only person in uniform from the 2024 draft class. So if that is the case, that is just another failure in the draft rebuild that we've seen in this post-Brady era, and really even pre-Brady. Like, the drafts have been bad, Belichick and now Elliott Wolf. So the 2025 draft class looks like it's going to be chock full of guys that should have impacts on this team early on. Will Campbell, Kyle Williams, Craig Woodson, Trevion Henderson, like, all these guys are going to play. Jared Wilson. This needs to be his first hit, and it needs to continue from here. Like, it can't just be another situation where next fall it's going to be just Trevion Henderson and Will Campbell are going to be the two guys from the 2025. Like, all of these guys that are thought to be contributors for this season from that draft class need to actually do it for Elliott Wolf to be a part of this moving forward, in my opinion. If this Vrabel thing is going to move forward and be a success here, they're going to have to switch that up.
And if they're going to have success this year, those guys have to show up. Like, we're penciling in 8 to 9 wins. If Will Campbell is not a serviceable left tackle, that number is going to drop significantly.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, the best way to rebuild, the fastest way to rebuild, is hitting the draft. And again, that's why they've been spinning their wheels here, because they haven't been able to do that. The fact that you had, what, 8 guys drafted last year, whatever it was, and only one of them might be in uniform. I think Caden Wallace sticks around too, just as an extra offensive
big
line
body.
Depth.
And
yep. Yeah, astonishing. Like, it's astonishing to look at how bad that was.
Incredible.
Like, just to quickly run through it and remind people, and I apologize in advance for doing this to you, but okay, Drake May, first round, 3rd overall.
Hit.
We like it.
Sure.
No brainer. Second round, 37th overall, Jalen Polk, wide receiver, after trading down from 34, where the Los Angeles Chargers took Ladd McConkey, who, as a rookie, had 1,100 yards receiving.
It's comical.
And if he had not been injured, he might have been cut.
Yeah. So Polk, reportedly done for the season, undergoing shoulder surgery. But yes, to your point, even if he had been healthy, he may very well have been cut. Third round, 68th overall, Caden Wallace. We just mentioned he's kind of right on the bubble. Maybe he makes it. I saw Doug Kite in the Herald and Chad Graff with the Athletic. I was looking at both of their 53-man roster projections. They had Caden Wallace on.
A guy that played tackle in college that they now think they need to switch to play guard.
Yeah.
Just so again, versatile. Even if they do
By the way,
keep him.
When they drafted him, they said they think he can play left tackle in the NFL. That was not correct. Fourth round, 103 overall, Layden Robinson, lineman. Again, probably right on the bubble. Maybe if Wallace makes it, Robinson might be cut at his expense.
And looked bad last year.
Yeah. Also in the fourth round, wide receiver Javon Baker.
Probably
who has done nothing as a receiver. If I'm going to give him credit for anything, he has at least seemed to embrace special teams and made an impact as a gunner, but I don't know if that's enough to get him on the team. Sixth round, defensive back Marcellus Dial.
Out for the year.
Yep. Sixth round quarterback Joe Milton, traded away
malcontent in the locker room, apparently.
He's already not that good as people, as people make him out to be.
Led you to
depends
the worst,
on who you ask.
Led you to the worst win in franchise history. and then seventh round tight end Jaheim Bell. Mike Vrabel already told us he's cut. So, yeah, like that's
F.
One hit, we think.
And it was a no-brainer.
Right.
There was plenty of
you had the third pick when there were three top quarterbacks.
That was it.
If Drake May ends up being a franchise guy, do you still look back at that draft as an F?
No, it can't be an F. If you hit on the quarterback, yeah, like that almost automatically makes it like at least a C minus.
Okay. It's still awful.
Yeah.
With the note that it was the easiest decision.
Correct.
There was three top quarterbacks.
It's a C minus with an asterisk.
You took.
Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah. All right.
They don't know what the they're doing. Do you understand that?
Thank you.
Well, yep.
That's true.
Thank you, Mr. President.
All right. We gotta catch a break here. I'm Scott McLaughlin with Justin Turpin and Tom Carroll. You can join us. Call in or text us 617-779-7937. Tom has your trending now, and we'll be back after this commercial. Welcome back. I'm Scott McLaughlin here with Justin Turpin and Tom Carroll. Doing some Patriots. Red Sox Yankees obviously on the board as well as the Red Sox go for the 4-game sweep tonight. You can call us 617-779-7937. And let's go to the phones here and take Greg and Lincoln. What's up, Greg?
Hey, what's up, guys? It's a great show. Enjoy listening. I think you're right. Like, the roster just has so many holes right now. The team can't be that great. But what I can observe and what I think Vrabel will bring to the table is getting the most out of the bottom end of the roster. So, like, if you look what he did in Tennessee, they always had strong special teams. Even when the defense had holes, they always had a decent defense. So we should expect big things out of both of those ends of the game. Another thing that kind of evolved with Vrabel is early in his coaching career, he was very much a Mike Campbell, bite your kneecaps off, I'm going for it on fourth down. I don't care if it's fourth and 10. He's going to go for it with the safe punts. He kind of evolved a little bit. That's still mostly his persona, but he kind of lost some games he should have won and learned from those. And I kind of saw a smarter Mike Vrabel in the later years as far as those tight situations. But that's really what I expect, and I hope that they give him enough time to get there because it's going to take a few years.
All right, thanks, Greg.
Yeah, Greg, so you brought up a good point that Vrabel is going to be able to get the bottom of the roster giving you contributions. And I always go back to this, and part of the reason why I was bullish on the Patriots heading into this year was the fact that Vrabel – in 2021, when he won Coach of the Year, they had 91 different players play for the Tennessee Titans. They had a crazy snake bit season from injuries. 91 different players saw at least one snap in regular season games, and they were the number one seed in the AFC. So he is clearly a coach that believes that you just plug guys into his system and you coach them up and it can work. So that's why, to me, I think operationally, it has looked night and day, and that is worth at least two wins, right? Yeah. So right there, you're at least working from six wins, and then it's up from there.
Yeah, he raises the floor, and this is what we all expected. It's at least going to be a professional program. Guys are going to know what they're doing. They're going to be prepared. Like, you're not going to have any of the complete chaos that you had last year, where it becomes evident, arguably, like, in training camp, but certainly as the season went on, that this team just, like, lacks situational awareness, doesn't have good game plans, can't get contributions from everyone who goes into a game. Like, yeah, that floor is raised, and you're right. Like, that's how doubling your win total becomes doable, even with all these issues on the roster that we talk about. Like, sitting here now, like, I would still probably pick this team to win 8 games. Maybe I was at 9 at one point and dropped down because I haven't been blown away these last couple of weeks. But yeah, this should not be another 4-win season. Like, that would stun me.
That would be an epic failure.
They couldn't line up correctly on the opening kickoff of the season last year. That tells you everything you needed to know. They had a penalty on the opening kickoff. How does that happen? How I understand they end up winning that game. But they just couldn't do
it. Set the tone.
Basics. And even in training camp, I remember being down there last year and, like, they couldn't line up right. They couldn't even break a huddle correctly. It was complete It was a clown show. It was an absolute clown show from the start, and it was throughout the entire season. And it's just not like that with Mike Vrabel. He's been there before. He's done this. And he runs a professional organization. He runs a tight ship, and that's what this team needs. I mean, like last year, it's completely night and day, and that's not dumping all over Jerod Mayo. That's done plenty on these airwaves and all over New England, but he's done it. And to have a coach that understands how to control a room, especially a team with when your leaders are younger players, like you hope that Drake May evolves into a leader, and it seems like Mike Vrabel's really pushing him to be one. Christian Gonzalez, I know he's a really quiet guy, especially if you listen to the interviews on the midday show here. He's really quiet, doesn't like to talk a lot, but you hope he evolves into a leader. Will Campbell, eventually, hopefully down the line, he evolves. They're all younger guys, and to have a coach like Mike Vrabel who's had success in the NFL and as a coach, I think that goes a long way. So I think him alone, like you said, probably does give them two extra wins. And beyond that, it's just the situational awareness as well. Jerod Mayo's favorite stat from last year, lost all these one-possession games. That's a bad thing for the coaching staff. Right. You are making yourself look bad in saying that. I don't think we'll be having that conversation with Mike Vrabel.
Mayo was not ready for the job.
And it's not his fault.
It's not his fault. It was written into the contract. The Crafts didn't want to lose him when he was interviewing for that Panthers job, or it was rumored he was going to interview for the Panthers job.
Like, he interviewed with the Broncos and got pretty close.
Well, the Patriots set themselves up for failure with Jerod Mayo, right? Like, they put it in his contract. They got rid of Belichick, so they had to hire the guy when he wasn't ready. The Patriots screwed themselves by not being able to fix the marriage they had with Belichick to keep him in place here for another 2 years as they continued to groom Mayo. If they really thought Mayo was going to be the guy, he didn't have time. And it's part of it's on Mayo because he did want the job, right? But it's really on the Crafts. So last year's a wash. They realized they made the mistake, and they went out and they got the best head coach available in Mike Vrabel. Now it's time to see what Vrabel's able to do, and I implore fans to not run out with their pitchforks after if they do win 7 games or 8 games, because that's a massive improvement from last season. Like if they win 7 games, but it looks a lot better and they just barely miss the playoffs, Patriot fans, it's okay to be upset, but you should not be calling for Vrabel's head.
I mean, things weren't looking great the last couple of years with Bill Belichick either. So
correct.
Like at some point that situation was going to be untenable, because Bill Belichick was also never going to – it's not in him to train Jerod Mayo, the guy who has it written into his contract that he's going to replace him.
It's a great point.
Like, that wasn't going to work. So I honestly didn't mind ripping off that Band-Aid. And in retrospect, would have been ideal to just hire Mike Vrabel last year, but you couldn't.
Yeah, like, eat the money contractually if you can and just get Vrabel in here. But they didn't want to do that.
In a weird way, I kind of look at it. And similar to like Joe Mazzulla in his second year, right? He obviously, we all know that he came in, took over Ime Udoka's staff, who Will Hardy was his top guy, went to Utah. Damon Stoudemire left and took a head coaching job at the collegiate level midway through the year. He had a very depleted staff. That offseason, they went in, they got Charles Lee, they got Sam Cassell. They boosted that coaching staff. Jeff Van Gundy was an advisor. They went out and surrounded him with professional coaches, guys that have had success at the highest level. And Mike Vrabel doesn't even need that. He's been a coach of the year. He led the Titans to the AFC Championship. But they also did that. Josh McDaniels, former head coach. Thomas Brown, on an interim level, head coach. Doug Marrone, head coach. You look around, and that's something that really stood out to me in OTAs. It's like, wow, like Doug Marrone's working with the offensive line. Like, there's like Thomas Brown's walking around working with different like receiving groups. It's like you're seeing all these people that have big league, high level experience, and the coach didn't even need that. But to have that, especially with football, when a lot of it's groups and position based, especially in practice, like getting down, you know, the fundamentals and the techniques and all that, having guys that have been head coaches, that provides like invaluable experience and wisdom to these players, and that are a lot younger of a group. So I think that's a big deal for this team.
Yeah, and I think it speaks to Vrabel's experience that he knows he needs that around him.
They didn't have that last year.
They didn't have that at all. And Mayo,
in large part because Jerod Mayo didn't have those connections.
No, he didn't have the connections.
He's leaning on like the front office to hire coaching staff, and it's like, that's not how that should go.
Now, Jim Pelt like was their 25th interview for head offensive coordinator.
He didn't have the connections. He also didn't think he needed the connections. He was like, it'll all be fine. You know, I'm going to hire who I hire, and I'll delegate, and it'll be A-OK. And Vrabel's like, look, I know I have great experience. I'm a smart football guy. I'm going to be the head of the operation. But I also know that I need awesome second lieutenants across the board to help me get this team to the next level. Like, that's an impressive coaching staff to turn it over the way that they did. I mean, the only guy that came back from last year is Jeremy Springer, who I think a lot of people locally really like and think does a really good job with the special teams.
That was one of the few facets of things they did well last year.
Absolutely.
The special teams was actually good, and they rated towards the top of the NFL in a lot of different categories.
And I think it speaks highly of Springer that Vrabel decided to keep him.
For sure.
Because he could have very easily moved on from him and brought someone else, and no one would have thought twice about it. But clearly he thought there was something there. So, yeah, I think across the board, just from coaching, and I know it's not like a sexy talker, so to speak, but the fact that they overhauled it is massive for their win total.
And that's a big reason you'll see this team look more prepared than they have been in the past, because you have these guys working with specific position groups, and that's part of it. When your wide receivers aren't lining up correctly, that's not something they necessarily touch in a team period. That's a individual, that's a group period thing that they'll touch on. And they have guys that understand this stuff now with being former head coaches. And like you said, the staff last year just didn't have that. And again, that's not Jerod Mayo's fault. He was just not ready for the position. But
wasn't
Mike
ready.
Vrabel and his connections, I mean, that's a huge deal, and I think it might be overlooked a little bit this year.
Absolutely.
Texter from the 774 says, RKK, Robert Kraft, screwed his own team by hiring Mayo 5 years before Bill left. No wonder Bill's team sucked. He did it on purpose, probably. So I don't think he did it on purpose.
Definitely not.
I think Bill Belichick cares too much to potentially sabotage his own legacy.
He wanted that
win
record, too.
Yeah, still does.
Exactly. But you certainly weren't getting the same Bill Belichick you'd gotten previously.
No.
Like, whether it was because he couldn't do it anymore, or there was too much interference and too many other things going on, whatever the reason, like, it was already falling apart.
Well,
so,
Bill, if you listen to him this week, he'll tell you it's because there was an owner in the way.
And an owner's
son was in the way. I mean, it's very clear that that relationship is nowhere near being repaired. And you saw
it's
the comments earlier this summer where Kraft said on Edelman's podcast, he did a live podcast from Fanatics Fest, you know, the best thing I ever did as the owner was hire Belichick, trade the first round pick for Belichick because it was such a risk and blah, blah, blah. And then Belichick calls up Don Van Natta and is like, listen, buddy, I was the one taking the risk. That is a blood feud at this point, and I don't know when that gets resolved.
Well, and we were talking before the show, guys, like, it's going to come up because, look, we just had the Tom Brady statue. That leads to debate about, hey, does Bill Belichick get a statue? And if so, when? Does Robert Kraft get one? Who gets one first? Well, there's also going to be Bill Belichick going into the Team Hall of Fame at some point, which, you know, should obviously that should happen the first year he's eligible.
Yes.
And we think it will because that's not directly a Robert Kraft choice. There's a committee who nominates players, then it goes to a fan vote. So, but he's going to be around, or at least be invited to come back at some point, because you're just going to have to, like, you can't just, like, not put him in the Hall of Fame if fans vote for him. So.
Correct.
And the reality was, is there was no easy way about going around this, right? Like, when you're a professional, you're in that relationship for so long, you have all this success, and then you are just so bad towards the tail end, and something's going to give. And Bill Belichick, obviously, I think some owners might have looked at it differently, and I think people also were kind of split on it. Like, oh, they should have let him keep going. Others were like, all right, it was time to go. And there was no real good way to maneuver this. It was going to be a disastrous ending no matter what. But I just find it comical that Nick Foles and Doug Peterson have a statue together out front of Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia, and there's not going to be a Tom Brady and Bill Belichick one.
Yeah, it's going to be a long time before Belichick gets a statue out there. As long as Robert Kraft's around, I mean, while Bill Belichick's alive, you'd hope
they
get the statue out there for him. But at the very least, 2027 is when he will be eligible for the Patriots Hall of Fame if he does not coach in the NFL again before then. And, you know, you have to imagine that RKK is going to be around still. That's going to be a very interesting thing to monitor here.
They should waive the eligibility period.
And
well,
remember,
he's still
did
coaching
Brady,
in college,
that's
the thing. So he probably still wants to coach in the NFL, whether he says that or not.
It's official that he's not coming back, and
right,
he's not coming back to the NFL. And, I mean, I don't think he'll ever get another shot in the NFL, no matter how well
UNC
goes.
Unless he kills it at North Carolina.
I just don't see it.
Which
I mean,
would be really cool.
Wouldn't it be cool?
It would be awesome.
I'm locked in Monday. I can't wait.
But then, like, does he decide, hey, I just want to stay here, like, Look, like,
right.
I figured this
no
out.
No owner, no owner son. It's great right. here.
Yeah, I mean, he might just, if things go well there, he might just want to stay there because he has all the power. He can do whatever he wants there, pretty much. Apparently, I don't know, maybe he can't add Jordan on certain emails, but like, he can basically do whatever he wants
he
there.
He probably could start adding her on emails yeah. if they win like 7 games.
Right. I feel like for this stage of his career, it's great as well. It's a much better fit than being in the NFL at this point of his life.
I mean, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I cannot
in
wait
theory,
for Monday night.
Right,
it's going to be a lot
go,
of fun.
If they go 5-7 this year.
Right, exactly. I don't know if Bubba,
well,
whatever,
to bring
is going
to
be
all that
with happy.
Him. His son's going to take over when he's done. He's got Lombardi right next to him. He's having a blast.
It's fascinating, man. I'm going to be locked in, too. That's going to be
It's going to be so much fun. And the ACC
thing.
Is good this year.
Yeah.
So
oh, yeah?
I think when the schedule first came out, they were like, wow, UNC could make some noise. But like, the ACC is going to be good.
It is. I think that UNC and BC, the two ACC teams that I think people are going to care about locally, it do not have gimme schedules.
No.
Both of those teams have a tough road ahead in that conference this season.
It's going to be fun to watch, though.
I believe we have the UNC's first game on WEI. I think that's a week from Monday.
Awesome.
Yes,
right?
A week from Monday.
To Labor, Day. Labor Day weekend?
Because the Sox play a day game that day. So I think first pitch for the Red Sox, they have Cleveland in town. I think that's a 1:35 first pitch. So then, yeah, we would be taking the national radio broadcast of TCU-UNC, which normally people would probably just be like, cool, and then change the channel. Not when Bill Belichick's coaching.
I'm so fascinated. Yeah, you're right. Like, that's exactly me. Like, I would never watch that game otherwise,
no.
But I will be locked in.
Absolutely.
Remember the big win BC got in that game last year?
Yeah, the FSU win.
Beat FSU.
Huge.
That was in that same game last year.
FSU was number 10 in the country. Thomas Castellanos went down there,
dominated.
Little
did we know how bad it was going to go for FSU.
Little did we know how bad it was going to go for Thomas Castellanos
that
Boston
as well.
College.
That as well.
So the Patriots are practicing right now while we're on the air down in Foxborough. You guys want a couple quick notes from practice?
Yeah, let's hear.
Love notes.
So I'm reading from Andrew Callahan of the Boston Herald, his Twitter timeline. Patriots wide receiver Kyle Williams is back at practice for the first time in a week. Took a hit to the head during the second preseason game in Minnesota. So good news there. Several other players missing. Christian Gonzalez still, Kendrick Bourne, Marcus Epps, Anthony Jennings, Jelani Tavai, Swinson, Jack Gibbons, Terrell Jennings, Layden Robinson, Cole Strange, Efton Chisholm, and obviously Jalen Pogue, who we know is out.
Wow, that's a lot of guys.
That is a lot. That's a long list.
I wonder if Bourne gets the Foxborough flu, too.
Interesting. Yeah, he's one that I think it's going to be a situation where they're going to need to tell him, hey, we see you as a depth piece at this point. Are you willing to be a depth
Unless
piece?
Josh
if he
goes
says
back
no,
for him.
They can probably trade and get something.
The Niners would be a good fit.
Fifth, sixth round pick for Bourne.
Send him back to San Francisco?
They know him, and they have a bunch of injuries at receiver.
Right.
So
it would make sense.
It kind of fits.
Yeah. What do you guys think? So since we're here, like, what do you think happens with the receiver room? They keeping six, seven, like – we touched on Javon Baker. Is he around? Because, look, we think Locks, Stephon Diggs, Pop Douglas, Kayshon Booty has certainly elevated himself into Lock territory and
Kyle
possibly
Williams.
Even week one starter.
Collins with the money they gave him.
So that's five.
Matt Collins, Kyle Williams. Yeah.
And then Chisholm. Like, that's the
six.
And so Polk is on long-term IR. I think Baker was trending towards making the case that they could have seven. He was having nice moments in camp. But then in the live game action, this is where preseason, the final score does not matter, but the game tape matters. And Baker did not look good at receiver in these games.
The Marcellus Dial injury is interesting with Baker, though, because they need a gunner. Now, would they be willing to keep him? He'll be listed on the depth chart as a receiver, but at that point, he'd be pretty much just a special teamer because Marcellus Dial, obviously done for the year with an ACL, he was your other gunner. So they keep Javon Baker as just a gunner. I think that's his only path to the roster.
No, it's a good point. My thought is it's not a position that he had played in his life until like 3 weeks ago. So is there someone that you'd rather keep aboard that gives you
more flexibility?
Is a defensive back, right? Like
right.
Usually the gunner is someone that's fast and can hit hard. I mean, Javon Baker is starting to run fast and hit hard for the first time playing football in his life.
It just feels like
so.
It's going to be a priority again this year, the special teams. Like, they're not going to neglect that area of the game. Like,
and that's why I worry that
coach team.
They're not going to just throw him a bone and make him the gunner so he can stick around.
I don't
know
if it'd be throwing him a bone, though.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Like, it might not be thrown. Maybe it's Mike Vrabel looks at it and is like, this is our second best gunner after Schooler. We're keeping him. He's a gunner. He's
so you're keeping him for gunner depth.
Maybe I mean
special teams depth in general.
I mean, it would be that Belichick would do that, and I think Vrabel kind of has that in him too, where he is gonna
interesting.
I wonder he is gonna care about special teams enough that there is room on a Vrabel team for a guy who might only ever play special teams.
I'm with it.
It's funny because we're just talking about, like, hey, they're not in the luxury to cut good players, but let's keep Gunner down.
Right, that's exactly
the reality of where this team's at.
Yeah, I mean, Bengals returned a couple kicks too, right? Like, maybe he's depth there.
Marcus Jones would be their number one.
Right.
They had Polk back there a couple
times. Yeah, well, so I think that there's...
So Marcus Jones would be punt. Has he had kicks too?
Yeah, Marcus Jones will be punt. Kickoff has become a... Because of the way they changed it, you're going to see a lot of running backs back there this year.
Like, I mean, we saw what Trevion Henderson.
And I wouldn't be shocked if week one he's your return guy.
Gibson's
your main
done it before
guy.
As well,
yeah,
right?
I think both of those guys will be back there week one.
All right, guys, we got to catch a break here. Scott McLaughlin, Justin Turpin, Tom Carroll with you here in WEI. We are here until 4 o'clock. You can join us, call, text 617-779-7937. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back. Scott McLaughlin here with Tom Carroll and Justin Turpin. Guys, we've done a lot of Red Sox, a lot of Patriots. So I'll say, you know, I'm our Bruins guy here at WEI.com. Turp is our Celtics expert. So we wanted to mix in just a little bit of it. Just a couple minutes, just maybe a couple thoughts.
Just
here.
A taste.
Yeah, a little summer check-in, let's call it, because we're starting to get a little, you know, month out from training camps for the Bruins and Celtics. So, Terp, the big news in Celtics land is that the sale of the team closed last week. It's done. Bill Chisholm, new owner. With that came the update that we weren't really anticipating, that Wick Grosbeck, while he will remain on with the team, will not be the governor. He is moving to alternate governor. So, what is kind of your... Because to me, that felt a little weird, where that kind of like... came out of the blue. You know, the initial plan had been he's going to remain as governor through 2028. Everyone's saying the right thing. You know, they're saying like, hey, we're all on the same page. This doesn't change anything. Is that true? Or what's kind of your take on how that finalized sale all kind of went down?
Yeah, to me, it sounds like it was just a paper move. Like his ownership stake, that is Wick Grosbeck, dipped below the 15% required to be a governor. So they made him the alternate governor. And they're going to work together in lockstep. And I think that's a big thing for Bill Chisholm. Bill Chisholm hasn't owned a team before. He's looked into different professional organizations, hasn't actually owned one. So he's totally new to this. And you have Wick Grosbeck, who has been definitely one of the better owners in basketball, maybe in sports. Like, the guy just never settled. Like, they were always knocking on the door for a while. They were right there, and he went over and just did everything he could to bring championships to the city. So to have a guy that's had a lot of success as an owner and is very well respected in the NBA as an owner, as your mentor to kind of help you get on your feet for the next couple of years, I think that's very invaluable for Bill Chisholm. That's going to be really important for him. And, you know, we'll see it. I know Wick Grosbeck did buy back into the team with some of the money he got from the sale, so he's going to be sticking around here, and I think that's good for the Celtics and their fans.
Now, do you think that Grosbeck is going to be willing to kind of take that step back and be a mentor type? I know that Chisholm seems like the guy that would be willing to embrace that and have a mentor, because he's someone that is clearly like obsessed with basketball.
Yes.
And probably realizes
ball
how
knower,
good
professional ball.
Yeah, absolutely. And Grosbeck, Chisholm knows as a fan that Grosbeck was a great owner.
Right.
So obviously Chisholm's going to welcome it. Is Grosbeck going to be the type of guy that will be able to put his ego aside and be that mentor for Chisholm?
I mean, regardless of what the structure was going to be, whoever's paying the money, the people that are investing the most, those are your decision makers. No matter what the structure was going to be, that was going to be it. So to have Bill Chisholm, to my understanding, the only person in the new ownership group that will meet the 15% threshold that required to be a governor and be an official decision maker by the NBA, I think that's good for him. And I think, yeah, I think no matter who was investing the most money, that was going to be your guys, no matter what. So I think for sure Wick Grosbeck will be a helping hand. They'll be in lockstep for now, and then eventually Chisholm will take over.
Yeah, and that's the key, and I guess that's where I have at least some concerns is for now.
It's, right.
Yeah, that they can say the right things now. They can even mean it. They can have this plan where they're going to work together, and Bill Chisholm's going to lean on Wick, and you know they're going to see eye to eye and make these joint decisions. Well, at some point, there's going to be something they disagree about. And I wonder, what that looks like, because this offseason, the organizational approach unfortunately became kind of easy when Jason Tatum tore his Achilles. He's going to miss most, if not all, of next season. It becomes pretty easy to say, all right, we're going to dip under the second apron. We're going to get all that in order. And, you know, whatever we can do, whatever roster we end up with, hey, you know, we'll try to win as much as possible, but everyone knows this isn't going for a championship this season. What it looks like after that is what I wonder about, because we would all like to think, okay, Tatum comes back, they're ready to go, and he immediately goes back to that second apron and invests, and they're all in. What happens if he's not? Like, that's not a guarantee. What happens if he's like, we're going to take a little bit more of a patient approach and, like, build this thing slowly? Because then I can see, like, Wick being like, oh, man, that's not how I would do it.
Right.
And, you know, like, then I think you can start to maybe have some tension if Bill Chisholm has a different idea than what we all hope he has.
And that's where things will get dicey. I mean, you could really start judging this ownership group for what it is now. I think this year will be kind of tough, but next year, as soon as Jason Tatum is healthy and you have a trio of Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and Derek White, you're expected to spend. You're expected to be spending like a championship team. Like, they've proven it. They've been together for 9 or 8 years now, and they've been to the conference finals 6 of those 8 years or whatever it is. So, yeah, every year those guys are together, you're a contender. So you're going to go in, and you have to maximize the window that they have. And the Celtics, and Wick Rosbeck has done a great job of this. They're maximizing that window, surrounding these guys with talent and a chance to compete every year, year in and year out. And that's going to be the expectation as soon as these guys are back on the floor together.
Yeah, I just wonder if this situation turns into what we saw in Dallas, right?
Cuban
steps back, but he's like, oh, no, I'm still going to be around. You know, I'm going to be helping out basketball, blah, blah, blah. And then you fast forward however many months later, 24 months later, and Luka Doncic gets traded to the Lakers. And then Cuban goes on a dunking tour on all these podcasts and gives quotes on the record like, ah, I wouldn't have done it that way. And I found out a half an hour before it was going to happen. About like, I just hope that we don't see that sort of messiness
right.
when it comes to the Grosbeck-Chisholm thing. Because Grosbeck obviously is a guy that's very media-friendly. He comes on this station frequently. He's on the other station. We see him on MSNBC, CNBC. Like, he's a guy that likes to talk to media. So when Chisholm does inevitably have to make a tough call in the next few years, I just hope that Grosbeck isn't still around in the picture in a way where he'd be like, well, I don't know about that. Like, you just don't want that at the top. And in the NBA, a sport where drama kind of drives the narrative,
especially in today's NBA with all the different aprons and the restrictions. Like, they want the parity in the league now, and it's tougher and tougher to build teams. And I think that's why it's such a luxury to have a guy like Brad Stevens with the Celtics. Like, we've seen what he can do. We've seen his track record as a president of basketball operations. I mean, he's very few misses, and he's hit on guys like Sam Hauser, who was undrafted free agent. They picked him up. Luke Kornet was in the G League. They promoted him, gave him an opportunity and a chance to – they really empowered him, and now he's a $40 million man in San Antonio. Like, there's just countless examples of this team and taking younger guys and developing them, and that's a lot to do with Brad Stevens, and that's a big credit to the coaching staff and the player development staff as well. But that's so important now, especially when you have two Supermax guys on one team, because it's tougher and tougher to live in that area in today's NBA. So those draft picks, hitting on younger players is just so important now in today's NBA.
All right, quickly before we hit a break, Terp, any more moves coming, or is the roster as it is, do you see that kind of being the opening night roster?
I mean, the one that you would keep an eye on is Anthony Simons, and I think there is merit to keeping him until the trade deadline. I think you're more inclined to get a team to overpay for a shooter that's a 20-point-per-game scorer at the trade deadline. Every team can use shooting, especially contenders, so I think a team would be more inclined to spend more, to throw more at the Celtics and trade capital, because right now they've been shopping him since they've got him, and they haven't had any bites. So let's gas up that trade value and reevaluate it at the trade deadline. And there's also a case for letting him play out the season. Let him play out the season. The $26 million comes off the books, or you can extend him for much less, because I don't think he's going to get a $26 million contract per year in his next contract.
All right, third and final hour of McLaughlin, Carroll, and Turpin coming up. I will save my Bruins thought for sometime in hour three. But next, we want to get back to the Red Sox. They're the story. They've won 3 in a row over the Yankees. Fourth game of the series, going for the sweep tonight. So we will get back to that coming up at the top of the hour. For now, quick break.